Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's 9:09. I'm Andy. Thanks for tuning into the program this morning. It's good to be here. I had promised Larry Myers was going to be on from the Republican National Convention. Just got a text from Larry. It's not happening today, but he will be on tomorrow. So we'll make up for it then, I promise. I do have a nice guest in the studio, a guy by the name of Victor Iverson. Hi, Vic.
Good morning, Andy, and good morning to all your listeners out there.
Life treating you well?
Yeah, it is. And I'm kind of sad that Larry can't join us. I mean, it's a lot of excitement going on.
Yeah.
I was just telling you off air that I received a video from Jordan Hess, who's also back there representing as the delegate to the National Convention, and showing a video of right where President Trump was walking into the arena and on stage. He had a great seat and just a very moving kind of picture that he sent after what we've seen on Saturday and just how the grace of God held his hand over this country and kept such a tragedy from happening. So
do you know you're probably old enough to remember when Reagan got shot?
Yeah, I was in fourth grade. I can remember my teachers discussing it in the back of the room, and I kind of overheard, and I can remember that moment. I've been to that hotel a couple times to different conferences, and there's a plaque there that says this is where the President Reagan was shot. And
wow.
It made an impression on me. It was in my formative years there. So
there are a few moments in life when big things happen and we know where we were, the space shuttle Challenger exploding.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Reagan being shot, those that are old enough, maybe Kennedy being shot. You and I weren't born yet.
No, but we weren't. But
I wonder if this is one of those moments. The fact that, I mean, I'm not sad. I'm not sad that he didn't die. I'm glad he didn't die, but I wonder if, is it going to be one of those moments where we remember where we were and what was going on when that happened? Or
well, it's had different impressions on all of us, right? But for me, it continues to bother me that our country is so divided. I've been someone who's been an unapologetic supporter of President Trump. I say, look past the little anomalies in his speech pattern. You know, he's a little bit different. It's almost funny sometimes, fun sometimes, not funny. But look at the man and what he's done as President of the United States and how hard he's fought for this country. And look at his family and these great children that he's raised, and quit listening to what I believe is out and out lies and just an attempt to take him down. And so for me, I'm so glad that he was able to safely come through Saturday, and I hope that those who have basically done everything they can to divide this country, that they will reevaluate, and maybe Americans will reevaluate this division that we've allowed to happen to us. I mean, I don't know if it's social media, I don't know if it's the media, it's a combination, but we've become less civil and more angry as a people, and we need to check that, but at the same time continue to support our nation.
Yeah,
as a patriots. So
there are, and it's sad that these people have a platform, but they do. There are people who have made some very disturbing comments after, you know, sorry he missed, or go, you know, there was even a congressman's aide who said something like, you know, go to shooter school next time so you don't miss or whatever. And that kind of stuff just breaks my heart that people really would feel that way.
But you know, what's really sad is that these people should know better. It's one thing to have, you know, some college punk or whatever, you know, their keyboard warrior trolling out there. But when you have people that are in institutions of influence and power, either in the media or in federal government, they should know better than put out a tweet like that. At least in that congressman situation, he was smart enough to immediately
fired her
and
immediately.
He should have, but the fact that that person felt at liberty to even say that is also very destructive. But you know, America's a great nation when you really get down to the people, and when you get down to, you know, who we are, and I think we're better than this. And in some ways, you know, maybe God still has hope for this nation, and will hold his hand over us. So
you're a public figure, you're a county commissioner, you get stuff said about you.
Yeah.
That is not true.
Yeah.
Stuff, not very nice stuff.
Yeah.
And I told my wife, you know, somebody asked me one time, well, you should run for office. And I'm like, I have no interest in exposing myself to what those guys like Victor Iverson or Donald Trump go through. I have no interest in doing that. How do you handle that? Look, you're human, Victor. Yeah. You can't just completely go, ah, doesn't matter. Yeah. It's got to at least a little bit, you know, the dings keep banging on you. They've got to make a dent occasionally.
Well, the only thing that really sometimes bothers me is, you know, people that really, I know that ideologically we are together, but for some reason we have, you know, are in disagreement with each other. And so, to be honest, I think... It doesn't bother me as much as you might think. There are times that people can annoy me, but but here in Washington County in particular, even those people who I find myself in disagreement with, and unfortunately sometimes I don't control my own self, right? Sometimes I let them, have you never said anything? Yeah, sometimes I can let them have it back right the same way. So sometimes I go home and my wife especially is so good at helping coach me, like, hey, you shouldn't say that. And one time, I have to tell this quick story. I was in a public meeting, and it got fairly heated. And, of course, it's on Facebook Live, and so my wife's watching. And she calls me immediately after the meeting, and she's like, the entire time you were talking, I was thinking, be quiet, you know. But at any rate, here in Washington County, we have great people. And I do know that social media in particular, it makes us less social. I'm tempted at times to say things I shouldn't. And so it is part of the process. As a history buff as I am, I have to admit, people need to study history and recognize that democracy and a representative republic as we have is difficult work. And it is meant to have, you know, confrontation and adversarial type of conversations. And it's just part of the process. And at the end of the day, though, if we're all kind of yoked to this idea of self-governance, then we can not let it flare too much. And I think the problem, and this is part of the conversation we're having right now, is that we've allowed it to flare too much in America. I mean, on a national level. And I hope that, you know, I hope that we can get back to some sort of rational conversation. And I don't know that that's going to happen immediately, but I continue to pray for this country and the leaders, and I continue to be a strong supporter of President Trump and unapologetically in what he's done and what he's had to put up with. Yeah. Nobody has ever gone through what he's gone through.
Do you get this from your wife sometimes? Honey, there's going to be so-and-so at this gathering. You need to watch what you say.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I get that all the time with my wife. Absolutely. She's like, so-and-so's going to be there, honey, so don't talk about this or don't bring this up. I'm like, oh, come on.
She knows we're going into a commission meeting, she will always give me a little bit of that type of coaching, and she's really good at it. And frankly, it has helped. I think I've learned to let it run off my back like water off a duck's back and stuff. But anyway.
That's good to hear.
Good stuff. So.
Good to hear that we're learning maybe the hard way sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, I've caused people to leave their room crying and stuff and later been heard about it from my wife that, you know, you didn't need to. I know. But,
well, you know, you have a great group of listeners that are very engaged. And I just want to say, if I've ever offended anybody that's listening right now, I do want to apologize. You know, so sometimes I can be a little rough, too. So I don't judge others for the same.
That's okay. We're rough around the edges.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
And we are learning as we're aging. And Victor is 53. I'm 58.
Yeah.
So we're right. Pretty close to the same generation. And I was in ninth grade when Reagan was shot. And I remember I was on my way to band class, and they had a TV set up in the band room. And there's never a TV set up in the band room. So I went in there and I'm like, what's going on? And then, of course, they replayed the footage over and over of Reagan being shot. And I was actually a missionary when the space shuttle blew up.
Oh, my goodness.
And we were helping someone move. And there was a, hey, come in the house, look at this. And, one of those moments that you always remember.
Yep.
You know, when we talk about what happened with Donald Trump, there's so many questions still.
Yeah, absolutely.
The biggest one in my mind, bar and away, is why wasn't this guy if they, the things I'm reading, they knew about him for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the counter sniper team saw him in their sights for at least 3 minutes, maybe longer, and never took the shot, never stopped him.
You know, there, I've obviously been glued to the news as I've, you know, kind of evaluated this. Clearly there was a security breakdown. I was having dinner last night with a friend who happens to have a cousin who is in the Secret Service. Mm-hmm. They weren't there, of course. And they were having this conversation with them, like what happened. And in his defense, he says, look, Secret Service, there were the first ring inside the secure ring was Secret Service. Outside was local law enforcement.
Right.
And so, you know, whether that's true or not, in his mind, he's like, you know, the outside ring where this happened was supposed to be patrolled by local law enforcement. Now, I don't know. There was a lot of questions. The same article you referred to is that they were aware of him for 30 minutes. I've seen multiple interviews and footage of people that were calling him out and saying, look, you got somebody on the roof. You know, how was there a ladder there? How was this convenient? You know, so there are a lot of questions. And I think the most important thing is just, thank God that it didn't turn into the tragedy, but yet we did lose life there. Wonderful father lost his life protecting his family there, and there's what, two other people that are in the hospital that are, you know, been injured in the shooting. So it is sad. It's you know, just shows that we do have resiliency in this country, and it feels like we're going to get healed over this, but I don't know.
I did watch one, and just real quickly, I want to mention this, a video of a guy who's a trained sniper who said, number one, first of all, that's an easy shot, 150 yards or whatever, very easy shot for a sniper. He said, second of all, if you look at the counter sniper team, there's clear video footage of those guys. The one guy, he called it in his scope. He was in his scope, clearly had the guy in his sights. He went out of his scope and eyeballed the guy without the scope. And he said after the shots rang out, he went back in his scope and without moving his rifle, fired, shot, and killed the guy. He said that tells me that they had eyes on this guy way early. They knew. I mean, they already had sighted him out, and yet, you know.
You know, the one interview that I saw was of one of the rally goers who had been to a rally there earlier. I don't know if it was in the last cycle or whatever, but this is not the first rally that Trump has had there. And when he went to the last one, he made the comment, because he was with his daughter, that they both identified that all of the high ground had been taken by the Secret Service. And so this time, there was a lack of that, which made it different. Now, is that just because they were shorthanded? Was that, you know, because they felt like they'd given that authority over to local law enforcement? It is something that we need to be concerned about as Americans. We should be able to keep our candidates safe.
It's worth mentioning that there were some different Secret Service agents or security detail with President at the convention yesterday. And also Robert Kennedy Jr. now has a Secret Service detail that he didn't, they had denied him before.
He should. You know, it's been a remarkable couple of weeks in politics, and I will tell you that the New York trial, the lawfare that happened there, the lawfare that has continued to happen against Trump, it seems to be melting away finally, and because there was honestly talk that they wanted to have him in jail during the convention. I mean, that was their goal. And we have to move away from that. And what I thought was remarkable is that when President Trump was convicted of those false charges, 34 of them immediately raised, what, $400 million. So it showed that American people were not going to put up with this.
We're not stupid.
And then, of course, you had these two remarkable Supreme Court cases. You had the case yesterday that was thrown out of court. And even the case in New York is now in doubt. So it seems that maybe justice will be served, and that we'll finally get away from this, you know, nonstop that we're up against. So,
speaking of justice, change the topic a little
bit.
Please talk about the Northern Corridor.
Well,
you guys have filed a lawsuit.
Yeah, we have. We're in the middle of we gave the court intent to file a lawsuit, and now we've given the green light to our attorneys to file the lawsuit. And so the brief has been prepared. It's going to be going in if it hasn't gone in already. And basically, we're suing the federal government for violating their own rules during this process. And this will probably be one of multiple lawsuits that Washington County will file. This lawsuit is really about them in changing or violating their own rules and what is called the biological opinion. So when you have endangered species, you have several different federal agencies involved, or two in particular. One is U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which is responsible for the species recovery. And then the other is the Bureau of Land Management that is responsible for the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that was that they kind of need to work in tandem. And there's a clear kind of, we believe, pre-decisional course that they've set themselves on to pull back this right-of-way that was given. And so this lawsuit is because of the way the BLM or the Department of Interior, because they're both under the Department of Interior, instructed their staff to pull back the biological opinion without going through all of their processes.
Hmm.
Because they, you know, the federal government never does anything fast except for when they want to.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to get this all done before November. And so we filed that lawsuit, and this won't be the last one. There's some other violations of the process because federal agencies just can't do that. They need to go through a process. So
is the lawsuit in an effort being put out there in an effort to slow things down then? Or because the my gut reaction suing the federal government, that ain't going to work. Nobody beats the feds.
Well, we started, you know, this whole conversation a little bit about what's been in the national news. The turn back of the Chevron case is also going to be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also some violations just in general. I mean, we've talked about this 2009 lands bill that basically called out the Department of Interior to give a right-of-way corridor. They've never done that. They've never done the transportation plan. But yet they're going to claim that this right-of-way and everything that we've done is wrong. And they're going to try to pull that back because of this lawsuit. They're also, basically Section 6 down there, or the area that was added down here, Zone 6.
Yeah.
They want to keep that without giving us anything. It's we know what they're trying to do. There's another thing of good news. There's a state agency called SHPO, which is a state preservation and historical organization, and they're supposed to work in tandem on archaeological issues because there was two parts of this lawsuit. One was the impact of fire. They said we didn't study it, which was false. And then they also said that we hadn't consulted properly with our tribes. But really we had. In fact, the local Shivwit band is supporting the corridor and supporting the county.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes a point when we get into building the road that we need to be sensitive to archaeological sites. Okay. And so part of this lawsuit, they were supposed to work with SHPO, which is a state agency of the state of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And because they are violating all of their processes in this thing, SHPO sent them a letter and said, we're not going to work with you if you're going to go through this way. And so that kind of has put a little bit of a crimp in their style, but also I think turning back of the Chevron doctrine, which is basically this doctrine that's been held by the courts prior that local agencies need to yield to the expertise of the federal agencies or local entities or private citizens. And so I think we're going to have a lot better grounds. Really what's going to happen is if we get a change of administration, we'll be able to probably negotiate some sort of settlement of the lawsuits with them and then proceed with the road. I know that there's been some chatter by people who oppose the road that there's some sort of alternative route, that we just need to think more creatively and that we can just, you know, push more people down onto 100 and just ruin downtown St. George. There is no alternative, folks. I'm just going to tell you, don't believe the lies. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. You know, Mother Nature did not give us very many ways to go east and west here.
Look at our topography, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we're going to be destroying neighborhoods and downtown with any alternative that's put out there. So do not believe what people who oppose the corridor say when they tell you that we can just easily funnel this traffic down onto some other road. They just can't.
I have read some of those people, some of their postings online, and it is and I've had a problem with this, Victor, since I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Putting animals' lives ahead of human lives.
Yeah.
And I'm all for, you know, protecting animals and making sure, I mean, we don't want any more species to go in extinct or anything like that, but we're talking about human lives, human lifestyles, everything about it. It's messed up.
Worse than that, Andy, because the fact of it is we can build this road. It'll be a beautiful road. We'll put a bike path along it. You'll be able to ride your bike out there. And we will put culverts in there. And one thing that I might have mentioned in one of your shows, we've been putting cameras on these culverts because we've been having people tell us, you can't bisect the reserve, the tortoises won't be able to go back and forth, you'll have to do an elevated road and all kinds of things that drive up the cost. We've started saying, well, let's try these culverts, and we've been just putting like cameras on them. These tortoises are going through the culverts, all kinds of species are using them. So the point of it is this isn't even a zero-sum game where, you know, you have winners and losers. I honestly believe that this will, frankly, enhance the habitat. Because, you'll be able to cut down the fire. You'll be able to access it. And then the tortoises will be able to go back and forth. So I'm not even a believer there. And then when you look at Zone 6 that we put in, that puts both recreational opportunities as well as some of the most dense tortoise habitat, there's no doubt that we can do this right. So.
And with Zone 6, the feds are like, hey, we like that, so we're not going to give you the road, and we want, they want both. They want their cake and to eat it, too.
And here's the thing that people need to realize is up to this time, the SITLA, the School Institutional Trust, have been good partners. But frankly, they could develop their land if they wanted to. They would just have to set aside enough for habitat. And so I don't think people should get comfortable with the idea that SITLA couldn't go up and develop immensely valuable land in the reserve if they wanted to. And so it's important that we keep everybody kind of in a win-win situation. And that's where the county's been fighting for the entire time.
All right. He's Victor Iverson. We're going to take a weather break, a couple of commercials. We'll be back with more. We want to talk about what's happening in Congressional District 2, the recount. Will there be a recount? What about postmarks? All that stuff coming up with the commissioner right after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back, 9:34 on KDXU. Victor Iverson, County Commissioner, is with me right now. Victor is former, Laverkan resident and current Hurricane resident?
No, I'm Laverkan.
Oh, you're still in Laverkan.
I'm Laverkan. Okay. Yeah.
Didn't you live in Hurricane for a time?
Yep.
Okay.
You know, people ask me, I'm from Laverkan. That's my hometown. Well, I like to joke around. I like to say, you know, I was born in St. George, so that's the city of my birth. Mm-hmm. My ancestral homeland is Washington. You know, Hurricane is where I went to school and where I've lived. I live in Laverkan, you know, so I claim a lot of community.
Nice.
So,
well, I actually, when we moved here to Southern Utah first time, I lived in Cedar for 9 months.
Uh-huh.
Then we moved to St. George.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Hurrican, lived in Hurrican for 7 years. Then we moved to Washington City, lived in Washington City for 19 years. Right now I live in Middleton, which is incorporated St. George City. I've been in almost all those communities, too.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
I haven't been on the west side. Our apartment when we first moved to St. George was off of Dixie Downs. So we were pretty close to over to Santa Clara. Yeah.
Back in those days, it would have felt like it was in Santa Clara.
Yeah,
right?
It wasn't
true. Much over there on Sunset for a while.
It was a few years ago. Before Home Depot, BHD, Home Depot.
Yeah.
The Arctic Circle was there, I think, but other than that, there wasn't much else.
Exactly.
You're right.
So,
Victor, thanks for coming on today.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure. I think it wasn't even your turn, right? It was supposed to be Adam today?
Yeah, Commissioner Snow was engaged in some conferences, and he wasn't able to make it back, and so we're going to trade places. You'll probably see him next month. So.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to have you. I'd be glad to have Adam, too. He's great as well. Yeah. Let's talk about that election now. Colby Jenkins, Celeste Malloy.
Yeah.
It was close.
It's extremely close. And don't hold me to this. I think it's 200 and something votes divide them. So it's
under the threshold for a recount.
And the threshold is pretty tight. It's like 0.25. So it's right there. It is extremely close. So what'll happen is all of the counties are required to do their canvass. I think it was last Tuesday that we had to vote on. That was the last day. Mm-hmm. And then the state of Utah has until the 22nd to finish the canvass.
22nd of this month. Next Monday. Yeah.
And so at that point, the candidates can ask for a recount, which I'm almost certain, if not positive, that there will be a request for a recount. And, at that point, as far as the county's responsibility, we'll treat it as a completely new election. And so
somewhere all the ballots are sitting.
Yeah, all the ballots
ready to be recounted.
Yes. And so we will first of all do what's called an analysis and logic test on the machines. We'll test them, make sure that they can count properly. And then we will start counting the ballots. Now, if there is any
I was going to say, by the way, I think we need an analysis and logic test on a lot of humans now.
We do.
But anyway, back to the election.
Yes. And so now there are ballots in an election that are called adjudicated ballots. So that means that the machine kicked it out and says, I can't.
Something's not right.
A circle wasn't filled in.
The signature doesn't match. Yeah. Whatever.
And so those ballots are adjudicated by poll workers as they take a look at those and try to interpret the intent of the voter. And so any adjudicated ballot is then signed and authorized by a poll worker so they know how it was adjudicated.
At this point, are they calling and emailing and texting people yet?
No, all of those.
So they're just taking a look at it.
Yeah, there will be no more curing of the ballots, and I'll talk about that in just a second. But these adjudicated ballots will be looked at by separate poll workers in this election. So the same person that adjudicated them last time will not adjudicate this.
Okay.
And then, because you want a fresh set of eyes, as far as the cured ballots, and those are ballots that usually have a signature problem. And so those are finalized. We emailed letters, tried to call anybody to get those taken care of. And so.
And by the way, somebody was saying, they send out a letter and then you may or may not get it. And you guys actually make a real effort. I mean, there's phone calls, there's, you're trying to get a hold of these people.
Exactly.
It's not just thrown out. Here's a letter. I mean, you're really working on making these things work.
It is hard. And I will bring up, because some people need to understand this, is that the state law allows for a clerk to release the list of cured ballots. This is kind of going back, right? This won't happen in the recount. But to release those to election campaigns. And then election campaigns can go through and look at those and see who they want to, you know, contact and ask them to vote. We've never done that. And so Salt Lake County was doing that years ago, back when you had those really close congressional races. Mm-hmm. The only problem is that the clerk at that time was a Democrat, and she was releasing those only to the Democratic Party.
Ooh.
And so then the state law came back and says, if you're going to do it, you have to release it this way, and it gave the rules. And so that was kind of the debate that happened between the county and one of the candidates, and a judge ruled that it wasn't necessary. The clerk didn't have to release those. And I will just defend the clerk and say this. The rules that start an election, this is something very important, are the rules we need to finish with, right? So you can't be changing any rules. You didn't do it before, you don't want to do it now. And so that was kind of the one thing that people might have read about. There is this issue of postmarks. And I want to talk about it because in the state code, which is what governs an election, it is very clear that the clerk has no way to remedy postmark issues. He has to take the U.S. postmark.
So if somebody says, I mailed it on Monday night, it should have been postmarked, and all the clerk knows is, I have this ballot, it's postmarked for Wednesday or Thursday. Yep. That's not right.
He can't do anything. I mean, so we have a certain number of ballots that I want to say around 600 that we don't have the right postmark. And the one thing is the postmark is supposed to be even the day before.
Right. Election. You have the day before.
And the reason they changed it is that there is a post office in Riverton where people could go out after the poll was closed because the post office stayed open late, and they could get a stamp for the day of election. So for whatever reason, the state legislature changed it to the day before.
Okay.
It is clearly marked in your instructions. You know how nobody reads instructions.
Right.
And we are going to remedy, or we are going to have a discussion about this issue. But unfortunately, right now, there is no remedy to count those ballots. They don't even open them, right? Because this is a situation where we have them, but we don't open them. We know what the ballots are. And so people just need to know that, unfortunately, the clerk and the county, our hands are tied on how to treat those ballots. And it clearly says you have to follow the postmark. Now, there can be several markings on the mail. For example, if you dropped your ballot in the Enterprise, sometimes as they run it through their machines, they'll give it a stamp, and then it goes to Vegas and gets the official stamp. We'll take that earliest stamp we can.
Okay.
So we've tried to be as lenient as we can on this, but unfortunately, the state code is very black and white that you have to follow it. And so, anyway, the recount, we have from basically the 22nd to, I believe, the next Monday, to have that finished and have our numbers submitted.
Okay.
And I do suspect that, you know, we found this in the Joe Elison, Willie Billings race that was only divided by a handful of votes. But there was a couple of those adjudicated ballots that a fresh set of eyes gave them a different interpretation. So there might be a few votes changed.
But not 200.
I still worry that Colby is not... It won't achieve the number that he needs, but this is a hard fought race and extremely close. Extremely.
Can we talk for a minute about the cure, the ones where the signatures don't match?
Yeah,
I think some people need to understand some things. Number one, if you have a missionary serving somewhere else, you cannot, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. You cannot legally, even if they say please sign this for me, you cannot legally sign it for them. That's against the law. Is that true?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we joke around that the biggest committer of voter fraud in Washington County is missionary moms.
Missionary moms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And or sometimes like I remember Kim Hafen, who used to be the clerk auditor, he told me a story that one time he called somebody and says, hey, we have your ballot down here. It doesn't match. And he was talking to the wife, and you can hear her yelling at her husband, I told you this, you know, I shouldn't have done that or whatever. And so they're...
Told you shouldn't have signed for me or whatever. Yeah.
These machines are very sensitive. And so there's a couple, and I don't understand it all, but there's several different files that we have of the voter signatures. And we set the kind of the sensitivity of our machine into the high 90s that it... You know, if your signatures aren't matching, it'll throw it out to a human. And so, but a lot of times people forget to sign their ballots. And we have a lot of unsigned ballots as well that are kicked out. So people just, they get in a hurry. They hurry and fill it out and they slap it in there and they just forget to sign it. And so I don't know what percentage of, you know, those are. I will say this. We've looked at like our cure numbers compared to other years. We've looked at the postmark issue compared to other years. Frankly, this isn't an outlier election. It's fairly close. Like, you know, you're always going to have a number of cured ballots that you need to cure, and you're always going to have you know, postmark issues. I will tell you, we have committed ourselves as a county and the county clerks, as Ryan Sullivan as well, to do everything we can to really help people understand that drop it in one of our boxes. Those boxes are picked up every day.
Or vote in person.
Or vote in person, or drop it off in person. But please, chain of custody is so important. And you think about it, we're basically sending our ballot outside the state now because all of our mail is sorted in Las Vegas.
Right.
I mean, we're losing chain of custody. When we received like... I think it's about 400 ballots about a week after the election from Vegas. And there were ballots in there that had been post-stamped for like the 18th. And, you know, we received them. So,
took a week and a half to get the same stored
from Saint George. You know, I know that I've heard chatter out there that some people say don't trust the ballot boxes. Please, we have cameras on the ballot boxes. We're going to try to do better to communicate with the voters, but please drop them off in those ballot boxes. It saves you the postage, and it means that the chain of custody, in other words, your ballot is back in the custody of the clerk's office more quickly. Please do that.
So. And there were drop boxes all over the county.
Yeah, and I think we're going to reassess that. I'd like to reassess it with the clerk's office, see if there's any way for us to even get more and more convenient. You know, we do need to have cameras on them. We do need to have them in secure locations. But we're going to try to make those more available.
So when we have a ballot box, and say it's a week before the election, are you guys collecting the ballots every night?
Every day.
Every day?
Yep.
Okay, yep. So they don't sit for 2 or 3 days.
No, not at all. In fact, I think in some of the busier ones, they're collecting them twice a day. So And you have to remember, when they collect them, we have to send out 2 people. We have to have, you know, all of the security that people would expect with the treatment of a ballot. And they get treated a lot more secure in our system than they would the post office.
Giant post office.
Now, I will say that if you are going to mail them, you know, because I do recognize people do need to mail, take it to the post office and have them stamp a stamp on it. And then at least you know it's going to be counted then.
So. When the election was coming up, we Stockton and I on our broadcast were like, look, it must be postmarked before such and such a date. We didn't say, you got to mail it and hope it gets postmarked. You got to have it postmarked. It has to have the correct date on it.
Yeah.
And So Colby Jenkins, you don't see anything changing.
Just because
it's very unlikely.
I think it's unlikely. If it was closer, if we were down to under 100 votes, I mean, I would imagine that we could expect something. But just my gut, and I'm just going to admit, I mean, I it's just following elections. I have no, I voted for Colby, and I mean, I know Celeste. I mean, it's just one of those situations where I appreciate our process, though. Our process has to be trustworthy. And unfortunately, there's reason to have doubt in the national process. There's a reason why Texas sued Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's because Pennsylvania changed their election law in midstream, and we can't change our election law, so we shouldn't.
And there were people showing up with bags in the middle of the night, too. Yeah. But that's a whole other story. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 952 on KDXU. Victor, I was lucky enough to be a part of a patriotic program on the 4th of July. I got to narrate it. It celebrated some of the great music, My Country, Tis of Thee, God Bless America, the national anthem, on the 4th of July. It was a great celebration. As soon as it was over, I was talking with Dr. John Green, who organized the whole thing. I said, what about next year? And he goes, well, next year is... it's a big anniversary.
It is. As we get ready, of course, next year's 2025, and 2026 is our 250th anniversary.
Getting closer and closer. Yeah.
Years ago, it's been about 8 or 9 years ago, Congress actually established America 250 Commission, and they've been working with all the states.
Okay.
And some states are doing a great job. Other states are, kind of asking themselves, is America really worth celebrating? Well, here in Washington County, we've declared ourselves America's county, and we've already put together a committee. We've started meeting on America's 250 celebration because there's actually a Utah 250 and they're coordinating celebrations. And so on our committee, we obviously have representatives from the cities, representatives from the school district, the university. We are going to have one of the greatest celebrations, but it's not just going to be 4th of July. It's going to be... you have to remember, coming up next year is going to be 250 for Lexington, 250 for all of these events that led up to the revolution. So starting actually next April 19th will probably be our first celebration. It's going to be a series of celebrations throughout our county as we just really celebrate the founding of this country and the eventual signing of the Declaration of Independence, which of course led to America's formation. So I want everybody to kind of put that on your radar. It's, you know, get excited about it. You're going to start seeing that brand show up. We have the Chambers of Commerce involved, Sean Christensen. You're going to be seeing it. Probably businesses get involved. It's, we're going to have a, we are really, you know, gearing this up to be a great celebration. And so.
Well, I think about the founding fathers, the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And I saw this chart yesterday, or maybe day before yesterday, about how young these guys were. James Monroe was 18 years old when he signed the Declaration of Independence.
That 18.
That means in 250 years ago, he was 16 or 17 years old.
Yeah.
Aaron Burr was 20. James Madison was 25. Alexander Hamilton was 21 years old at the time.
Yeah.
These guys, I mean, you and I, we've been around the block a few times.
Yep, yep.
And I think about someone that age, I think, oh, they don't know nothing about nothing, right?
Yeah.
You know, they haven't experienced what life is all about yet. But these guys were out there sticking their neck out, literally.
You know, I think about this a lot, Andy, about the importance of a multi-generational community. And when it comes to things like this, I've also been stunned by the age that they had. But also, it was important that they have the Franklins and the Hancocks and the Washingtons. And
by the way, Benjamin was like 40 at the time.
Which
he was an old guy.
Yeah, he would have been the wise old man,
yeah.
Right? So, but I think part of it was they had the fire as young people. So I don't think those of us who are starting to gray that we should dismiss our youth, because they will be the signers of the Declaration of Independence,
yeah.
So to speak. They are going to be those who lead on. And so we need to have hope and confidence in them. At the same time, the generations kind of give each other the balance that we need. So that's one thing I worry about, as long as I'm going to get on my soapbox, which it feels like I'm on, is that I do worry one of the biggest fears.
Wait, your wife's not going to warn you about saying something you shouldn't. Or,
no. I think that, you know, we need to have more babies. We need to, I'm past that prime, you know, prime, but I, young families, and we're not, in Europe especially, they're really struggling to have children.
The lowest birth rate per married couple in history is right now.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. In the world.
Yeah.
2.1 kids per married couple now.
Yeah.
Which, and you know, I think in Utah it's still 3.1.
But we're, you know, the demographics, we're catching up with the nation, but our young people, we need them, and they were the patriots of the past, and they're the ones who soldiered the conflicts, and so I really do think that a strong community is one that has, you know, young people and older people and middle-aged people and working together. So, and Washington County's so far and has done a pretty good job. I do worry that we're pricing out our youth and stuff, but that's a problem for another show.
Yeah,
but
we can spend a whole show on
in
that.
In the meantime, let's celebrate America's 250 and just get everybody kind of geared up for it. Everyone's excited about it. There's going to be a lot of different celebrations. It's not just going to be a 4th of July. It's going to be amazing. We're talking about these drone shows, fireworks and drones. I don't know if some of you have seen, Hilldale did a fantastic drone show.
I didn't see it, but I've seen videos of drone shows that are amazing.
They say they're amazing. I haven't seen one yet, but they say they rival fireworks shows. So
yeah, and they're so good because they're not human, they're computer controlled.
Yeah, we had a little bit of there was a little bit of hiccup with the 4th of July St. George fireworks and stuff. But what was fun is everybody's going down to the Valley of Fire, because I was sitting up. I was taking a look at the community waiting for the fireworks to go off. And, man, there was so many amateur fireworks shows going off that were as good as the real thing. So
it's true.
Kind of exciting. I love the patriotism of our county.
So. Yeah, we love our country here in Washington County.
We really do.
For sure.
So.
Victor Iverson. Vic, thanks for coming on.
That's
I don't know if people have seen Vic. He looks – remember Dick Clark and how he never aged? Victor's kind of like Dick Clark. He looks you look at Vic and you say, oh, what is he, 30? No, he's 53 years old.
You're being kind.
You hide that little bit of gray on the sideburns and nobody would have any idea that you were in your 50s.
Oh, thank you.
Not a clue.
It's always great to be on your show, Andy. So.
Well, thank you, Vic, for coming on today and informing us. I learned a lot today about the ballot and about the lawsuit and... I feel like you guys are doing the right things,
and
that's what really matters. So
thank you.
This is the Andy Griffin Show. I will be back tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening to the program. And we'll see you at 9 o'clock tomorrow.